Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all my blessed radio fans out there. You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty, and this is the first show in a couple of weeks because of my moving and transitioning and putting the documentary together and all kinds of really fabulous stuff that is planned. Living and Thriving will be going live almost every day, starting in August, but the interviews are coming in as we speak, so I'm really excited about that. It's just been really incredibly busy, and I thank you for your patience in waiting for me and staying posted on my Facebook at facebook.com/celiacroads or at rustymcdonald.com. I'm super, super excited to have Meg Hainsworth on the line, on the horn. She's getting ready to give us her lowdown in regards to a documentary that she's also a part of. And I'm so excited because, Meg, you're going to teach me so much about not only mental health issues, but about documentaries, because I'm trying to figure out how to make one myself.
Tell me about your documentary.
Oh, my gosh. It's about being a single mother and how 84% of the single parents out there are actually single mothers, and 54% of those single mothers actually poverty. So 54%
wow.
of the children that are raised are being raised in poverty and why that happens. And so I have seven beautiful, amazing women as to what their stories are, and some senators and legislators and people of interest who want to really look at the issue because it's a fixable issue.
Amazing. That's a very important topic.
Yeah. So anyway, tell us about you. Who are you? What do you do? You're a very talented woman, I hear.
I'll try to live up to that. So my name is Meg Hutchinson. I'm a singer-songwriter from Boston, and I've been playing music since I was a teenager. And living with bipolar disorder for 18 years, but it took me 9 years to realize it. So I was living a life as an artist, and as you can imagine, touring is not the most stable lifestyle. And increasingly noticing these real roller coasters. And having been an overachiever and a perfectionist my whole life and a very private, stoic person, I did not ask for help. I actually, due to lack of education, I thought depression happened to the weak people. And I was not a weak person, so I was just going to power through it on my own and write more poetry and sing more songs. And I did that for 9 years before, at age 28, getting home from a tour in Europe and just completely crashing. I mean, my brain literally shut down to the point where I had no option. And that was a huge turning point in my life. So the arts have been integral to my healing all along. And this film is a wonderful celebration of how all of those elements come together.
Now, we've got 22 minutes, and that's never enough time on the show, but the excitement for me is you're doing this in Boston, the opening night's right down the road from me, and I'm so excited to really get some feedback and hear what it was like for you, because this, what an honor to have your story put up there for people to understand and feel and share and become compassionate towards, you know? How cool.
It is very exciting. You know, tomorrow night is the premiere at 7:30 at the Regent Theater. And to think that, you know, over the course of 18 years or even just the last 9 years, I've gone from being someone who was terribly ashamed to be diagnosed with a mental illness to be someone who now is totally excited to stand up in front of a theater full of people and talk about these issues and say, you know, these are not issues that we should be quiet about, and it's completely possible to live a productive and healthy and well-rounded life with these illnesses, and talk about some of the things that have been really central to my own recovery path. I've found a real balance between Western medicine and meditation and yoga and all of these Eastern forms of treatment. And I think one of the important things we cover in the film is that we need the best of both worlds. And so much of the conversation we find is really polarizing. And, you know, people are either saying, yes, medication's great, or people are saying, oh, you should avoid that and you know, only do these holistic things. And what I try to do in my own life and what the film really celebrates is that we need all of these elements together to really recover on a deeper level.
Well, and I'm a huge advocate that there are certain things you need, new age meaning, you know, hospitals, that type of medicine for. But for the most part, I think that medicinal, homeopathic, and healthy lifestyle is really what the true cure is. But there are certain things, there's certain viruses that you need antibiotics for. I think we overdo it.
There's no question we do, yeah.
I think it's crazy. You know, my daughter, my oldest child has ADHD, and they wanted to put her on every medicine on the planet, and she was just a very skinny child anyway, like extremely skinny, and the medicine was going to make her skinnier. We're going to malnourish her to calm down her ADHD. That it didn't make sense to me. But we found a lot of homeopathic ways to cope and tolerate her ADHD, and it was much safer and healthier than putting her on meds. What did you find as you were going through your coping strategies and learning how to handle and thrive with bipolar disorder? What did you find to be most effective? Was it more meditation and less medication, or...
Well, it's interesting. I come from a family much like the one you describe, where we really were raised on homeopathic medicine. We didn't even get all of our vaccinations. You know, we all had whooping cough as a result. And my parents are former hippies, and they really did not believe in medication. And, you know, I embraced that whole mentality. And unfortunately, that became a real hurdle for me for many years and actually prevented me from seeking treatment because I was very wary of Western medicine. And I really fully believed I could solve this on my own and, you know, eat a little more kale and just go on more nature walks. And that was what our family believed in. And those things are all incredibly vital. But there are illnesses that require medication, and bipolar disorder is one of them. It is not, you know, it's a very dangerous illness. The suicide rates are incredibly high when it goes untreated. And I feel incredibly fortunate to be, you know, living with this illness in a time where we are making progress with medication. That being said, I was probably properly diagnosed, I was way over medicated. So the early years were very challenging to find what that balance was. And about 3 years into my recovery, I started studying at a meditation center in Cambridge with a Tibetan Lama. He's actually in the film, Lama Mi'kmaq. He's the Harvard Buddhist chaplain. And that was a huge moment of change in my life. I started to slow down. I stopped touring as much. I started a daily meditation practice, and I also started yoga around that time. And what I noticed immediately was that I was able to start reducing the medication. And as the years went on, I even got to the point where I thought, well, maybe I'm so well, I don't need medication at all. And I slowly, carefully, with my doctor's supervision, went down even further on this main mood stabilizer drug, and lo and behold, had another depression and was humbled and kind of had to accept all over again, this is an illness that I do need medication for, and there's no shame in that. And, you know, when I look at my family history and I look at suicide in my family, it's absolutely clear to me that this is not an illness I want to, you know, take chances with. Are you still there? I seem to have lost you.
Sorry about that. I hung up on you. It wasn't personal.
No problem.
So you left off with you lessened your medication, you upped your meditation and the practice of being humble and slowing down and being more in the moment. Do you advise that everybody consider more, you know, obviously I want you to explain what bipolar is because we didn't cover that part, but would you advocate for people really considering yoga, meditation, chanting? I'm a big chanter.
Yes, sorry, what was the end of the question?
Oh, no, I was just wondering if you would advocate and really encourage people with bipolar disorder to do a lot of chanting, meditation, and kind of having a lifestyle that is more holistic than clinical.
Without a doubt, I would recommend that for everyone on the planet. I think nothing can be better for us than to slow down and to familiarize ourselves with our own minds and to start to find that space in our lives and in ourselves in a world, in a culture that's so frenetic. But especially if you are dealing with an illness of the brain, as I am, you have to be especially careful to protect that brain and protect that stability. I would never say to someone, try to live without any medication with this illness. I know way too much about how this kills people, and I have experienced that in my own family. These are not illnesses to take chances with. That being said, you know, the more holistic treatments we can bring into our lives, the lower our medication dose can be and the more deep, deep healing can happen. And, you know, I certainly don't, you know, one day if I'm a great yogi, if I spend the next, you know, 40 years meditating, yeah, maybe there's a chance that I will restructure my brain to the point that it is so stable that I can, you know, manage without medication. I am certainly not there yet. And I do believe, and we got to fly to Madison, Wisconsin and interview a neuroscientist about this, they're seeing without a doubt in fMRI machines that meditation changes the structure and function of the brain. And
yep.
Not even long periods, but just mere weeks of meditation training can change the brain. So, you know, if you're dealing with an illness of the brain and you know that meditation can actually change that structure, then you start to realize you're treating the deeper problem. You're not just treating a symptom with medication, but you're getting down to these pathways and you're rewriting those those synaptic pathways. So that's incredibly empowering.
And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but we only have about 90 seconds left, I think is what she said, the recording. I definitely want everybody to know where you're going to be at tomorrow, what time, what the address is, and, you know, red carpet, it's so exciting.
So, yeah, the premiere is in Arlington, Mass., and it's at 7:30 p.m. tomorrow, and it's right off of Mass Ave. I apologize, I don't have the exact address in front of me, but it's the Regent Theater. And you can find all the information on the Regent Theater website or on our film website, which is packupyoursorrowsfilm.com, or on my website, which is meghutchinson.com. And we're very excited. We're very excited to see. We hear that there'll be a lot of people there. So we hope you can join us.
I am very, very glad that our paths crossed. I'm honored to have met you. I'm honored that you are advocating for a real serious issue. I mean, it's really serious. It's really amazing that you're doing this and sharing your life with us. So thank you so much, Meg.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. I hope you get to go and check her out tomorrow. It's fabulous, 7 o'clock, Regent Theater, downtown Boston. Look it up. She is fabulous. And I will definitely keep you all posted as to when the next show is coming up. It'll be after the 4th of July. We have some amazing guests coming on, but I want to let you know that I love you, and I think you're beautiful, and you amaze me, and I'm honored to share this path with you and introduce some amazing people that live and thrive in this world. So until next time.
Mm-hmm.